welcome back to another episode of Professionals Podcasting. In this episode, attorney Francesca Okahoyne discusses the unique facets of family law cases that involve a child with disabilities.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to explain it more. My name is Francesca Okahoyne. I'm a matrimonial attorney at the firm of Lesnovich, Marzana, Lesnovich, Okahoyne, and Okahoyne, located in Hackensack, New Jersey, but I practice all throughout the state of New Jersey. Just by way of background, I've been practicing matrimonial law for approximately 17 years, but I adopted two children who both have special needs from China years ago, and that sort of piqued my interest in representing clients with children with special needs. I spend a good portion of my practice helping families that have special needs because their divorce situation is different than that of a regular divorce. Every divorce is different in general, but when you have children with special needs or even multiple children with special needs in a family and you're going through a divorce, you really need to be aware of several factors that are not present in divorces with children who don't have those special needs. So when a client comes into my office, or like this morning when a client called me for a consult call and they tell me that their child has special needs, the first thing I need to do is understand really what the needs of the child are, because truth be told, parents don't always explain things accurately. So typically I ask the parents for an explanation, but I also ask them if I can review the IEP. An IEP is an individual education plan that each child will have in the school district if they have special needs. So if the child's of that age where they have an IEP, I'll ask them, can I read your IEP? Can you send me some doctor's reports that are really thorough and important and that you believe are important, so I can understand that of, you know, what really is happening with this child and what this child's day-to-day life is. I also ask the parents to give me a snapshot of the child's day, you know, walk me through who cares for the child, what therapies they attend, what their day-to-day looks like, so I can really figure out the best way to help them and find, you know, we'll talk about it in a minute, but a financial and a custody situation that's best for that family. So we want to understand what the day-to-day life of the child is. And I also want to understand what special circumstances exist. And an example is today I spoke to a family that's daughter is wheelchair bound. So obviously there's a lot of circumstances we have to think of, because transporting a child in a wheelchair is very complicated. If the parents are divorcing and separating houses, we may need to make sure both houses are, you know, adequately prepared for a wheelchair. So there's a lot of expenses and a lot of thoughts that goes into representing children who have special needs that typically may not come into place in other considerations. So the first thing, once I've gotten to understand, you know, the special needs of a child, what they're like, what their typical situation is, we start talking about custody and parenting time. Custody and parenting time is often the most difficult part of any divorce. And when children have special needs, it can be more complicated than in a typical family where they don't have those kind of special needs. Some things that we have to think about is, how does a child do with transitions? Unfortunately, autism rate is very high, and the rate of families getting divorced with autistic children is even higher. Speaking very generally, children with autism often suffer from change, and transitions can be very difficult. So if we have a family where the child is autistic, then it may not be a great situation to have parenting time where the change is every other day. That may just be too much for a child. If they're going to have a temper tantrum and suffer through a change, we need to look at other possibilities. So I really want to understand that, because maybe this is a family where the transition should occur weekly. Maybe this is a family where the transitions need to occur at school and not at the home. So that's something we consider. We also typically suggest that the family works with a therapist, works with a behavioral specialist to maybe observe these kind of things, such as transitions, so they can give us attorneys better ideas on how to represent them. I had a case where transitions were really, really difficult, but once we learned that as long as the child was bringing some of their belongings from one home to the other, the child did a lot better. And those are the type of things where we can bring in experts, behaviorists, you know, therapists that can work with us to figure out how we can make something like the transitions much smoother. And that's just one example of a type of custody consideration that we have to keep in mind. Another example when we're looking at custody is, how realistic is it? If a child has therapies after school, hours and hours of therapies, and only one parent can really take them to the therapy, what are we doing trying to force a parenting time schedule that doesn't work? We need to be realistic. We need to have an idea of who took the child to the therapy and how are we going to continue that. Are parents moving far, or hopefully are they staying close so that they both can be involved? Was there a babysitter? Can we see if that babysitter can work for both families? So those are the type of things that we have to look at when we have custody in consideration. Also, in traditional custody situations, we tend to keep children together, right? The family has three children. They, you know, the three children experience parenting time with mom, experience parenting time with dad. In situations where you have a child with great special needs, I often like to talk to the family about actually splitting up parenting time. Maybe, you know, dad takes the child with special needs on some days and mom some days, so the other children get to experience some more quote unquote typical children activities. Again, this is something we really have to talk to each family and see what's best for them. But these are things you really have to consider when you have families with special needs. Economically, raising a child with special needs can be very, very difficult for a family and an intact family. And when a family is divorcing, typically the budget is tight. So we also need to look into that. What I typically do is I ask the parent to give me a really clear understanding of what the costs are, who pays for the costs, how are they reimbursed, how much out of pocket are they laying out, and what a schedule of a weekly, monthly schedule looks like for laying out money. Something as simple as therapies may get reimbursed at the end of the month, but somebody might have to bear it until the insurance reimburses it, and that could create a cash flow problem that we have to be careful with. We also want to understand what's in dispute, right? When an intact family is in place, everyone seems to get along. But when a family is going through potentially a contentious divorce, sometimes therapies such as horseback riding or art therapy, if they're out of pocket, they often can be in dispute. We find that happens a lot of the time because the family just doesn't have as much disposable income and sometimes has to prioritize what they want to use that disposable income from. So it's really important to understand what therapies are in place, how they're played, what's in dispute. And I'm really not just talking about therapies. We have families that require special diets, you know, gluten-free, various kind of diets for special needs. We have children. I've done a lot of cases with children with autism where they have to wear special clothing, weighted clothing. All these things can be very expensive. So you want to have an idea of how it was done in a family, who paid for it, and what they did if they didn't agree. Let's say mom and dad don't agree on buying a child very expensive clothing with tags. You know, how do they decide when they were intact? Did they consult the pediatrician? Did they consult the therapist? So you want to understand that. So when you enter into ultimate agreement, you can put that same kind of support system in place so they're not calling their attorneys and fighting over every nitty gritty details. Child support. In New Jersey, we typically defer to the New Jersey Child Support Guidelines to determine child support. I think when you're representing children with special needs, you need to think out of the box. You need to understand that our guidelines allow you to go away from the guidelines and calculate support a different way, looking at the needs of the children. So one practice tip I always say is if you're representing a family with special needs, don't just plug in the numbers in the guidelines. Really look at the nitty gritty as to what the needs of the children are and what the cost is. Same goes for spousal support, equitable distribution, and other types of financial relief in a divorce. You can't just do textbook because, for example, if a child's never going to be self-dependent, you really have to look at the parent that's going to raise that child. They're not going to have an ability to ever work again, potentially. They're not going to have an ability to save for retirement. So you really need to look at the nitty-gritty of this and figure out what works best for this family and what's fair, and not necessarily use the quote unquote formulas and the equations that we use in other areas or sometimes use in other areas of law. My last bit of advice is that you need to consult other professionals. So when somebody calls me and they have children with special needs, I have a network that I immediately jump out to. That network includes special education lawyers, because perhaps the kids are going to change district. And if the kids are potentially going to change school district, we want to know what's involved with changing their educational plans that they receive in the district. It may not be worth it. We may tell a family you really need to stay in district. I also suggest that we reach out to trusts and estate attorneys. We like to create special education trusts for these children because ultimately, and I won't go into it too much, if child support goes directly to a child, they could lose their ability to receive Medicaid, DDS, and other financial relief and very important services from the state. So my advice is contact the people in your network, make sure the family is put in touch with the right people,
so that way you're not risking or jeopardizing the child's financial welfare by doing something as providing child support.